531.
Jay Langaaya grew up in South Auckland and Ponsonby to Samoan parents. His family were musically inclined. As a teenager, he toured in bands, then got an early job as a council worker teaching street kids to play musical instruments. One of Australasia's favourite entertainers and actors, Jay Langaaya has an array of film, television and theatre credits to his name. He is a trailblazer, being the first Polynesian cast in an Australian TV production, Water Rats, in the mid-90s, and as the first Polynesian to take up roles as Mufasa in Disney's blockbuster musical The Lion King, and also the Wizard in Wicked. Jay's film credits include Nims Island, Daybreakers, Vincent Ward's The Navigator, and Star Wars. His television credits include Home and Away, Bed of Roses, Jay's Jungle, Street Legal, Water Rats, McLeod's Daughter, Legend of the Seekers, Xena, Warrior Princess, and Play School. Jay is graceful enough to be on the line with us now to talk about his illustrious career. Kia ora e hoa, kei te pea he koe.
Oh, kei te pai. It's aloha lava uso, thank you for having me.
It is my pleasure. You have been on the top of my list for the year that I've been doing this, and I finally got around to calling you. I've run out of excuses. I've been trying to find an angle, but you cover so many grounds. I'm just going to talk to you about your career. Let's go back to the beginning, please, Jay. Where did it all start, this performing bug thing?
Oh, look, I think I'm like everybody. I mean, if you ask the finger, if you ask, you know, Nathaniel Lees, it's all the same, really. You know, you start in your own family. You know, Balangis call it, performance. We call it showing off, you know. So, and it started at church. You all sing in youth groups, and you know, and for me, it's that thing that, you know, came naturally. I went to, you know, I grew up in South Auckland, Viscount Primary School, Arahanga Intermediate, Mangere College. That's where, you know, Betty Ann, also one of your guests, Betty Ann, was 2 years down from me. But and I remember that our choir was made up of, you know, of like 46 voices, and that was like four families, you know, you know, that's sort of where it sort of stemmed from. But, you know, we tend to, I mean, you know, unlike our youth nowadays, who are very educated orientated, you know, when I went to school, to eat other people's lunches, you know. You spend most of your time on the football field, and you realize that, you know, we spend most of our time in the music block, because, you know, the teachers there allowed us to play, and that's where, you know, I think a lot of Polynesians have to acknowledge all of those teachers who allowed us not to pay our hireage fee on our instruments, because that's how we learned to play. You know, you can ask anybody, how do you learn to play saxophone? Oh, I took it up at school, but I never paid the hireage fee.
What about the stage? So when did acting come into the picture? Music was always there.
Yeah, look, I think, you know, I left school in 82, and I was already singing in a trio called The Consorts. We put out a single called Marries on 45, you know, and we worked on Prince Tuiteka's Ee Paul album, so with Delvanius, you know, the amazing, and toured everywhere. And then I got a job and during the daytime, I was doing a PEP scheme. I was, you know, working as a youth detached worker, you know, with the street kids. And a television director, Keith Hunter, from TVNZ, was looking to do a documentary about the street kids. And this was, you know, just around the same time as the apartheid riots, you know, with the All Black riots at Eden Park. And so they came down and they shot, and I was the liaison between these kids. And then afterwards, I got a call about 3 months later saying, look, we're putting together a auditioning people for his television show called Heroes, about four musicians who form a band in Auckland. You know, Michael Hurst was one of them, you know, Margaret Umbers was one of them, and a lot of our stalwarts, you know, acting stalwarts, also graced the stage there. And so I went along. They had about 8 instruments out. I played them all, and then, you know, they gave me a script, and I read like a 3-year-old. And I thought, oh, well, that's it. I can go home now. And about 3 months later, they rang me up and said, look, we'd love you to play this role of being a Ron Maleschi, a courier driver. And that was my first foray into television. I sort of went back to front. I went to TV first, and I was terrible, you know, because, you know, you just try and do the best you can. You know, and I worked with people like Frank Whitten and Vicky Horton, all these great actors. And so after I finished the first season of that, I answered an ad in the paper that was for Mercury Theatre. And they were looking for just, you know, cast members. You know, a lot of people think, oh, and then you went straight to stardom. No, I went straight to the chorus. You know, I auditioned for Raymond Hawthorne. I got in, and my first musical, which was in 83, was Sweet Charity. And that's when I first, that's the second time I met Nat. The first time I met Nat was at school. You know, he came with a touring group to Mangere College, touring performance group, and that was the first time I saw a brown face, and that was the first influence the first thought that came to my head was, you can do this for a living? And this was probably 1978, and that's when it started, you know, the ball ticking over. Little did I know how much of an influence he would have on my life, and yourself as well, you know. But and then we met up, and as soon as I saw Nat in there, another brown face, I just gravitated, and we became the bookend brothers, you know, where, you know, if he was on one side of the stage, I'd be on the other side of the stage to even everything up.
Wow, what an amazing career, though, that you've been on, all of these movies, all of these TV series. What are some of the highlights for you? If I had your CV, I think Star Wars would be one of those.
Oh, look, I think the thing is that I've always wanted to be the first Samoan in space, you know, and when people argue with it, I said, look, have a look at Attack of the Clones. You know, if you can see it, I was there, you know. People are sort of laughing there, you know, and a lot of our people go, so, he's through that, you know. But, you know, my mum, who's tomorrow, my mum celebrates her 91st birthday. And my mum is always like, you know, everyone at the church goes, yeah, my son, he's a police officer. And I go, mum, I'm pretending to be a police officer. She could never get the, you know. And then all of a sudden I worked on Home and Away and I was a minister. And she goes, yeah, my son is now a minister. And I go, mum, I'm not a minister. And then she would go, why are you an Anglican minister? Why can't you be a Presbyterian? Mum, that's what they wrote. You can feel like that. But, you know, you can always sort of, in the end, you just got to go, yes, Mum, I am a minister. You know, you just got to go with it. So, but yeah, look, I think it's, for me, the highlight always is seeing the resurgence and seeing brown faces. I mean, I was one of the first, Tim Werner Morrison and I did the first Maori radio station, bilingual radio station, Aotearoa Radio. We did a pilot in 89, and then we kicked it off in 1990, and we did the breakfast show. So it was one of those things that, you know, people always ask, hold on, why is a Samoan on a Maori radio station? And my answer, people like Titifai Haruera would ring up and go, you know, why is there, you know, a Samoan on a Maori radio station? I went, well, you know, Auntie, it's because you guys hired some canoes from us, you remember? You know, about 200 years ago, Tainui, Te Aroha, Matatu, you name it, and you have yet to return them. So this is part payment, you know? She would laugh and she goes, and anyway, my Maori's better than Morrison's. I the hooky, you know, so every morning it was like, you know, you wake up and go, I'll turn on radio, auto no way to go jeremiah, be a do ya go to and they go, oh my god, that boy's Mickey is really good.
Yeah, speaking of Maori roles, there are many roles that you have played, many, many races. How challenging is that?
Look, I think it is always challenging. I think, you know, the difficulty, and I see it in here, I see it in Australia. I mean, to some of your listeners, I'm actually speaking to you from Balmain in Sydney. Look, you have to acknowledge that. I still acknowledge the fact that, Don, I got run off the set of Adventurous because Don Selwyn turned up and, you know, he did his mihi to everyone, and I was just an extra. You know, and this was a early TVNZ show about the early explorers, Captain Cook and that, coming to New Zealand. And I was just, you know, dressed up in a Maori pew-pew and that. And so I had a conversation with him in Maori. And then he goes, "Oh, what tribe are you from, boy?" And I went, "Oh, Ngāti Hāmoa. The Mututapu no te Mananui Akiwa." And he goes, "Samoan. I don't know that there was any Samoans." And he goes, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And we were just having this polite sort of conversation. He goes, "Oh, I'm not sure if that should be right." And I said to him, "Is it because you worry that I won't play this role, which is just an extra in the mag, just play this role with integrity, or is it because I'm Samoan?" He goes, "Oh, it's because you're Samoan." I went, "Oh, at least you're straight up with me." So it is always those things that roles for me are always challenging because we are not tongue at Nafenua, you know, so, you know, it's difficult because you always have to acknowledge not only the indigenous people here in Australia, but also our Maori friends there. I mean, you know, I look at roles like, you know, Jake the Mus, you know, they were looking for a 6'1", you know, big Polynesian or, you know, big, you know, guy, brown guy to fill that role. And, you know, and I think Tim Weta did a fantastic job, but, you know, I wasn't even allowed to have a look in because I was Samoan. So, you know, and when you sort of raise those issues, people go, "Oh, hold on, you know, it's tato tato." But, you know, I think I'm an actor first, you know, who happens to be Samoan, and I am very proud of that. And I have, you know, always been able to carry that with me. You know, I think the biggest conversation I have with people who create, content now is that, talking to the playwrights here in Australia, you know, I say to them, you have to write about a family who happens to be Tongan or who happens to be Lebanese. Don't write about a Lebanese family because there's a finite opportunity there, because you will run out of opportunities to write about a Lebanese family, but you will have every opportunity to write about a family who happens to be Lebanese. And 9 times out of 10, you'll find that, you know, the parents, you know, speak fluently, but the kids are half and half because they live in this world. And that's the beauty of that kind of writing. And I think that for me, that is my sole purpose in life. And that's what I really enjoy, is to be able to sit down with people and discuss the narrative. You know, we just finished doing the wonderful movie Legend of Baron Toa, which is, for me, was just such a blast to be able to not only work with my good friend Uli Latukefu, but also, you know, it's the first time in like 20 years I got to work with Nathaniel Lees again. So, you know, for me, it was just a pleasure and an honor. So, look, you know, I've been doing this since 1982, and, choose a job you truly enjoy. You never work a day in your life.
How far behind the times are Australia in terms of recognizing the Pacific Island communities there? I mean, we fill those screens every time those NRL games are played, and yet when I look at Australian programs, there don't seem to be any Pacific Islanders who live in Australia as far as those programs are concerned.
Yeah, look, I think that it is we are way behind as far as diversity is concerned. It is a constant battle and a conversation, and as much as everyone, you know, takes up the arms and goes, "Yes, you're right," you know, and you have everyone fighting for the same thing, until we change the mindset of those at the top, I think it's a bit like our Warriors team, the NRL Warriors team. Until we change the mindset of those at the top, nothing will change at the bottom. And I also say, why is it the people with the least amount of power are expected to do the most amount of work? You know, it's the actors, it's the technicians. You know, whenever we do a job and they go, we don't have enough money, it's always us that has to have a pay cut. It's never about those up at the top there. And I think the responsibility is that, you know, when you look at our landscape here, and you look at especially sports shows, we have over 50% representation in NRL. And yet when you look at their television shows and their sports shows, you would hardly believe that we were there, you know. And I think that it is one of those things that is being addressed right now, because they can't ignore it anymore. That's the reason why they're suggesting that Polynesians being, you know, involved, allowed to play in Origin. Why? Because your best players now don't come from Australia. Because your best players now are from Queensland or New South Wales. So how do we rewrite those rules? So, A, not only do we get them to play Origin, but we also trap them into stop playing for their own countries. And I think that's the conversation that we're having at the moment, and what we have to be really careful of, because Tonga has proven that they could field a team that will beat any international A-grade team, you know, in the world.
Jay, unfortunately, we are running out of time. We will definitely have another talk again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you so much for your time, my brother, and love to Sandy, and do take care.
Love to the family, and may the force be with you.
Thank you, my brother.